Michigan Liberation is a statewide network of people and organizations organizing to end the criminalization of Black families and communities of color in Michigan. We envision a state without mass incarceration, mass policing, and punishment. We envision a state with the best public education in the nation, single-payer health care, and thriving Black and brown communities. Here, on the Respect the Roots podcast, we will lift up the stories and experiences of those impacted by mass incarceration, collective ties to the criminal legal system, and the frontline efforts to end mass incarceration.
What's up, everybody? Thank you for joining us for another episode of Respect the Roots, Michigan Liberation's podcast TV show. Today's show is going to be absolutely amazing. They all are. But today in the studio, I have Leslie McGraw. Leslie is a poet, a writer, and social media activist dedicated to empowering community members by providing them with a platform for their personal narratives and resources to strengthen their communities. She has a long history of writing poetry and envisions a world where poetry and digital media unite to inspire creative expression and positive change. Leslie's journey is rooted in accidental activism, driven by her love for family and a passion for social justice. She is also the mother of a talented artist who is a member of the mental health community. His challenges led him to become justice influenced, should we say, and now he is an inmate of MDOC, or as we know it, Michigan Department of Corrections, with an earliest release date of December 2025. Her regular load is heavy, and with expenses, advocacy, and constant push to open doors of communication so that he receives human treatment and proper medical support while an inmate. So I present to all of you, Leslie McGraw. What's going on, Leslie?
Hey, thank you.
Man, powerful bio. But I mean, I just know this is going to be awesome because, first of all, thank you for coming in the studio with me and telling your story and your son's story, Mark, mm-hmm. Mark's story. Mm-hmm. So let's get right into it, Leslie. How did all this begin? Because the name of this show is Prison Story, The Impact on a Mother. Mm-hmm. Tell me, how did this all begin and your journey with being a mother with a son that's currently incarcerated?
Right. So how did it all start? I would say that it's hard to answer that concisely because that changes the more that I work in the, get involved with the work. You realize it really started a long time ago. It started in kindergarten when he was in kindergarten and I was teaching computer classes and I was pulled out of the classroom because there had been a quote-unquote emergency on the school play yard. And when I came to the phone, I was thinking he had been hurt. You know, what do I need to hop in the car? What had happened?
Right.
Come to find out, it was a lunchroom supervisor who had access to confidential records that his dad had been incarcerated before.
Okay.
And so she saw him playing a regular game of what she thought looked like cops and robbers on the kindergarten lunchtime playground and thought that there needed to be an intervention because she knew that his dad had been incarcerated before and that he might be experiencing trauma. I said, no, he's playing a game.
Right.
And so it created all, it was a lot of issues, you know, because where I thought I was being a good mom, being open and transparent about what we were dealing with, it actually made him a target. And before the first semester of first grade, he had been to the principal's office 27 times.
Wow.
Yeah.
By the first grade.
First grade.
Wow. Yeah. And during this time, his father was incarcerated. So
he wasn't incarcerated at that point. He was like a frequent flyer. Like he might go in for 2 weeks here, or 30 days here, default on one of his child support. You know, like he was in the system.
Right.
He was in the system. He hadn't actually done anything that remarkable at that point. Now, speed up a few years, he did end up doing some hard time.
Wow.
Yeah, but at first when my son was small, it was just more like he was just like a frequent flyer, you know. I don't even know half the time. I was just like we'd hear right. from him a couple weeks. He was at his little hotel.
Right, his second home almost like. Yeah. Yeah.
But that's my child, and I was raising him, and that wasn't like a everyday situation that he was dealing with. Like, we weren't together. So for that to be, first of all, the confidential statement shouldn't have been shared with a lunchroom supervisor.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Not that that's not an important role, but it's just not a role that is usually given that kind of information.
Right.
And so it started early, me having to protect everything was criminalized. There was a criminalization of things that he did. And then again, like, I know too much now to really decipher when it started, because also I learned only this year that a lot of jail systems, when they figure out like how big to make a jail in an area, they decide based on third grade reading levels.
Right.
Like how many cells to build.
Wow.
And so.
And that came up in another podcast that we did today. You know, shout out to Dr. Eddie Connor that talked about that's how they determine it's a business.
It's totally
based
a business.
On statistics, you know, based on reading levels, literacy. Mm-hmm. Wow. So you confirmed that.
Right. So then there was, in first grade, there was a big meeting because he wasn't respecting his hula hoop of space. It's that, because it was just the two of us at home. So he'd lean on things. He didn't like to sit up straight. And wow. So there was all these professionals in the room. And so I had to become an advocate for him really early on. And then when he got older, his last name, because he carries his dad's last name. They're like, oh yeah, I know your family, you know, I know they're not, I remember one counselor said, I just know that, they have a reputation for not being serious about education.
Wow.
Regardless that my son was an excellent student.
Right.
You know, all of those things. So it started pretty early. So when, I started seeing some things around the mental health issues, mental health is already criminalized, but mental health, and this is my experience with, you know, people that I know and with my own son, my story, is that mental health in Black boys is criminalized.
Wow. And explain that for those of, especially from a mother's perspective, what does that mean exactly?
So, so it means that like he would have certain issues at school. Like, for instance, the going to the principal's office 27 times, right? Which really had to do with him just not being able to sit still that long, you know? So many of the times it was like, oh, he refused to tie his shoes. He chased the bunny in the room. I was like, why was the bunny out of the cage?
Right.
If you have a bunny and you have a five-year-old, things can happen.
Right.
And so it was him not conforming. It was him not conforming because he has a little bit a different way of learning, receiving information when he's it was always like little slight difference, which is, I think, also lends to why he's so talented and such a great artist, because he has a different way of processing information. And so or he might say something that, you know, is say, oh, kids say the darnest things, but he would say it and they're like, oh, we think that he might be exposed to something.
Right.
So let's have a discussion about.
Right.
What is he being exposed to at home? I was like, nothing.
Right.
I don't go.
Because they was, and let's just even go deeper. You're basically saying they, the criminalization, I mean, trying to turn him into being a criminal at a young age.
Right.
And so as he's progressing, as he's growing into a young man, you know, tell us, how did that look? Like, when did he first get arrested? You know, like, what did that look like?
So the justice involvement, it didn't start with an arrest. It started, I think, the first time that I said, wow, like, because he was always so cute. Like, he was the one, like, you know, and that's, there were a couple incidents that happened. But one was, he was walking home from a game. He was around 13, 14, something like that. And they had, the police had stopped him because someone said he knocked over a recycle bin.
Mm.
Okay, he shouldn't have did that. And they should have reprimanded him. But they fingerprinted him. And took his, checked his ID and all that. I thought that was over the top.
Wow. Wow.
And he was
kind of getting him set up in the system.
Getting them set up. They were getting things together. There was another incident where he and a group of boys stayed. He was, I want to say, like 20. They stayed at a hotel for like 2 days and just like listen to music. They were, you know, working on some music, doing stuff, whatever. Well, one of the kids, who happens to be a Caucasian boy, was actually using his mom's credit card against, like, he didn't ask her. Like, he stole his mom's credit card. They didn't all know that. And so when she put a fraud alert, the hotel, seeing that the boys were mixed, but that there was some, you know, more black boys than other, called the police. The police came and pushed down the door and put guns to their head on the ground and all this stuff over, you know, $100 potential room fee. And so,
wow,
yeah. So he spent the night in jail, and I had pneumonia. And I remember going with my mask on over to the Washtenaw County just to see what was going on, and you know it was serious. And so those kind of things. And again, I think that it's hard to decipher to pull them apart, because part of the mental health experience is dealing with stigma.
Right.
In fact, that for Mental Health Awareness Month this year, the focus was on stigma, actually. That's the stigma of mental illness is almost as bad as the mental illness. And so for young people who haven't developed a full sense of who they are yet and their place in the world, having their peers see them as crazy or different or whatever is huge. And so I saw him doing things that, like, follower type behavior.
Following his peers and stuff. And so as we, like, fast forward into now,
He's
26 now. And how long has he been incarcerated?
Since December 6, 2021.
2021. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's been some years, and we're looking at a release date of 2025, mm-hmm. and everything. So tell everybody, because there is someone, I promise you, mm-hmm. who's going to hear this or see it and be like, wow, Leslie, I totally can relate. The journey of having, from the time he went in till now, what has that been like?
So,
and I know you have a letter that you want to read,
right,
Leslie,
I'm not going to read this whole letter, so don't get scared, but I'm just looking at it, because... So this letter that I'm looking at was actually to the judge who sentenced my son.
Wow.
I wrote it in May of this year. He was when he was sentenced, because he stayed at the county in Lenawee County for a year and a half because of all of these slowdowns. With part of it because they didn't have enough personnel, part of it because of COVID, part of it because he has a mental health concerns, they had to like have a different evaluation. So it just took a long time. And so he had his first psychotic break in October of 2017.
Wow.
So from not saying as, you know, as a mom, you knew before, but his official, like, hospitalization, very sick time was October of 2017. And so from 2017 till 2020, he had several hospitalizations. He was very sick, and, you know, he was not wanting to face that he had something different going on, and so he wasn't taking his medicine a lot. And so in 2021, he we were able to get him disability insurance and some sort of, you know, support, some actual support. He was housed because he needs his own place to stay, you know. I have a younger daughter, you know what I'm saying? So I have to watch that kind of stuff. So he had his own place to stay. He was doing good. He was working part-time, everything. And then so at the time that we got a warrant, which was October of 2021, the incident that that he's in there for actually had happened 14 months prior when he was really sick. And he was with friends and family. And he was noted as one of these five co-defendants. In fact, two of the co-defendants didn't even know his name. Wow. Like, he was just there.
Right.
He wasn't part of the conversations. He wasn't part of anything. But he was just there. So he was placed at the there.
So I'll let you read part of that letter. I know you said it's a long letter.
But I'm going to just talk about... I said he's been inmate at the Lenawee County Jail since December 6, 2021, after being retrieved from his home around issues that occurred on August 11, 2020. And so first I was disheartened to find out in October 2021 that my son was in any way connected to this serious incident. I read the victim statements and watched their in-court testimonies. Some people were harmed. No one was... you know, there was no death, but there was harm, gun charges. At age 14, the bedroom of my family home where I had been sitting working on homework was riddled with bullets. I had to drop to the ground and came very close to receiving a bullet in my head as it whizzed past me. Because I was a child living in Ann Arbor without many close friendships, I considered myself safe. I looked out the window at two white assailants walking away laughing. I had never seen them before. The police would not accept my description and nothing was ever done. 32 years later, I still remember and replay that evening, remembering the distinct smell of gun smoke in the air. I identified with the two women who are still afraid of windows and panic going outside. If I had been shot or hurt in that hail of gunfire, they would still have walked away laughing. I've yet to articulate how this has stymied my relationships and sense of worth. Mr. Cadell, or my son, Mark, excuse me, promoted me to motherhood when I was 19 years old. I was very intentional about what changes I wanted to see for my life and the type of environment and community I wanted him to grow up in. A few months after his birth, his dad and I parted ways. We were in two different phases of life. And then I go on to talk about how I cultivated a community that wasn't, you know, where he was... affirmed and all of that. And so when he began or was on the cusp of some serious mental health challenges, I realized that there was broken, that there weren't a lot of solid solutions for young Black men that needed extra help, and a dearth of services for young Black men who also dealt with mental health challenges. I pushed repeatedly to get my son the best therapist that I could afford. Extracurricular activities, church activities, counseling, no one could connect. And the last year that I worked at the University of Michigan, I missed a total of 27 days due to mental, physical, and behavioral issues related to my son. After 2 years of deepening his connection with his dad, he lost him again. In 2013, his father was arrested and in 2014 sentenced to 7 years in federal prison. He was not released until June 2020. During the time of his father's incarceration, his behavioral and mental health issues worsened and our connection weakened. And then I go on to talk about some of his challenges. And in November 2019, which is an example, I received a call from St. Joseph Mercy Hospital. A staff member asked me if I was related to Mark. I said, yes, that's my son. He said, your son has checked himself into the emergency room for multiple wounds after being brutally beaten and then accidentally breaking his hand through glass.
Oh, my goodness.
They were going to release him since they had treated his physical wounds, even though he was exhibiting major mental health issues and needed security to corner his room. When I arrived, I knew he was ill. I tried to get them to keep him for a mental evaluation, but the area social worker and doctor on staff sat me in a room and said that they felt what he was dealing with was, quote unquote, more criminal than medical, and there was nothing that they could do. Then the social worker told me that if he kept it up, don't worry, he would end up in jail anyways, and that, quote unquote, jail really has all the resources. A year in jail could do wonders for someone like him. Then the doctor said, we wish we could help, before leaning over and telling me, Mom, you're doing a good job, and patted my knee. We didn't even make it to the car before he created a scene and refused to go home with me. And then later that night, he had a breakdown. This is right out the hospital. And so that's the example. I was trying to avoid this. There's no help. One time he went from a mental health facility and was, before he went there, I had got him a room at a hotel so that, you know, we could do intervention there. Right. So afterward, they took the hotel address and was dropping him off at the hotel.
Now, who is this, Leslie?
This is the mental health. I don't know if I should say the name of the hospital, but this was
the facility,
a state facility hospital, considered reputable.
Right.
Was about to use like the Red Roof Inn, like it was an actual residency right from the hospital where he's supposed to go into like a next stage or be with family. They were just going to drop him off.
Right. And now if you just join us, we've been in listening to Leslie's story, her and her son's story. Her son is currently incarcerated at one of the MDOC facilities, Michigan Department of Corrections. He is scheduled to be released in 2025, but he's been in for about 2 years now, and he's dealing with mental illness and so forth, or diagnosis, mm-hmm. as you said, Leslie. We've got about like 5 minutes, because I knew this was going to fly by really fast. But just tell everybody, 2025 will be here before you know it. What is the next step? What does that look like? Because, you know, in this line of work, you're like you said, you're an activist now. What is, how are you preparing?
The next step is when he comes out, like people who have absolutely no mental health issues whatsoever that go into MDOC come out with $60 and $70. No coat, no winter coat. That's how they come out. So where all of the things that built up, it took 7 years to build support for him beforehand, when he comes out, I'm nervous about, I mean, where is he going to, you know, how is he going to be housed? How is he going to find a job? So everything that would be a concern for a returning citizen, which is already dismal, is heightened maybe 10, 12 times that, you know, because there's no support. So my next steps are in the moment. Like I have to right now, he just was moved to a different facility, learn a new facility, find out who has the paperwork, because I'm on the list to be, you know, notified about his stuff. But last time he was sick for 2 months before they notified me, because they didn't have authorization, because one person didn't give another person the proper paperwork
for
me to be notified that he was sick. So you know, so the next steps are always meta. Like it's next steps. I'm thinking about what I need to do for him to do as well as he can while he's in there. and get what he needs while he's in there and be his advocate while he's in there. And also I'm thinking two steps ahead when he comes out. How do I help him? So because he's bright and he's talented and he's
creative,
all these things, yeah. We just need some support.
Support, yeah. And with that, Leslie, for those of you who are listening, we're talking to Leslie McGraw. She is a social media activist, activist, because she is fighting for her son and other people. Because it's not just about Mark, mm-hmm. your son that's mm-hmm. incarcerated. You end up caring for so many. And I know there's somebody that's going to be listening or watching, Leslie. Can you please give everybody where they your contact information? Because I'm sure there's going to be some people that's going to want to contact you to join you in this journey, as well as us at Michigan Liberation. You know, we got your back.
Yeah.
And so when Mark does get out, like so many, having that community, it takes a village.
It takes a village. And we have a village. We just need to make sure that that village is positive and healthy and inclusive. And this trope that people that have mental health issues are dangerous needs to stop, because I feel like that is, it permeates through the legal system too. Because when I tell you, reason I told you those part of the stories, my fear when he was on the outside was just as bad, because not that he was going to hurt somebody, that somebody would hurt him.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So, yeah, so
yeah, definitely
me
give
and a couple of other mamas and aunties have gotten together, and we call ourselves the Out the Systems Advisory Council.
Okay.
And he's, you know, we're just planting seeds. And so if you just send me an email at, and that's lesgo4it@gmail.com, then I'll send you over our info, and if you want to get involved. And we're not going to be a fully nonprofit organization or anything. All we want to do is let other moms and aunties and
know
what's up, and to kind of help navigate. I didn't know. I'm still learning. I didn't know any of this stuff. I still get probation and parole, the names and terms mixed up.
Yeah, I got you, Les. And let me tell you, if they didn't get that email address, reach us at Michigan Liberation, .org, and we'll make sure we get you in contact with Leslie. Man, we got less than 20 seconds, Leslie, but I want to just spend the 20 seconds. Thank you for coming to tell your story. And you know, you got to come back, and we got to go more. We just scratched the surface. But thank you so much, Leslie. And thank you all for tuning in for another episode of Respect
the roots.
Yes. Until next time, y'all, respect the roots. I'm out. I'm Miss Marjan, y'all. Thank you again, Leslie. So much love and respect.
Okay.
Michigan Liberation Education Fund, C3, conducts grassroots organizing, leadership development, and civic engagement activities. Michigan Liberation, C4, and Michigan Liberation Action Fund, IE, are sister organizations.